The Birdhouse Chronicles, written by Kathleen Miller, narrated by Garrison Starr, presented by Vibrary Audiobooks. Chapter 1. Entering Zion. The first time I stood in front of the old farmhouse, I was determined to like it, especially since Kirby and I had already bought it. A muted portrait of the house had been imprinted on my memory when our real estate agent faxed us a photograph. I had folded the slick paper and carried it around in my purse for days, sneaking looks while I sat at my desk in San Francisco. During that agonizing period between fax and first-person examination, I strained to flesh out the faded black and white image. A wispy ghost of a house that floated on the page, but after traveling 3,000 miles to the village of Zion, I was relieved to find my new home was solid as a brick wall. In fact, solid as several brick walls. As I drove down the Center County dirt road, craning for my first glimpse, the picture I'd carried in my purse blossomed to life with color, texture, and dimension. A wide expanse of green grass stretched from the road to where the 100-year-old structure seemed to grow organically from the ground like an aged oak tree. At the base was an enormous porch wrapping around three sides of the red brick house. The turned wooden posts were covered with peeling white paint, as were the door frames around the aluminum storm doors and the trim of all 29 windows. Fish-scale shingles covered the attic gables. The white paint on these had worn so thin that the wood showed through, producing a shadowy look very similar to the fax photo. On top of it all, lightning rods, a weather vane, and chimney rose out of the silver tin roof. My first reaction was one of awe, that after years of renting a city apartment, I should be mistress of such a massive house, and also one of panic, that after years of renting a city apartment, I should be caretaker of such a massive house. I left the car in the driveway and examined the eyesore garage. It had obviously been tacked on during the era when automobiles became more important than architecture. The owners who built it covered their new addition with asphalt shingles pretending to be brick, and the garage's rusting tin roof looked as if it had been rescued from an abandoned chicken coop. As I circled the house, an August breeze blew through the valley and the stars and stripes billowed from a pole. I sat down on a yellow porch swing and stared at the view beyond the driveway. Several hundred acres of green cornfields converged into a single vanishing point on the horizon, and beyond rose the purple ridges of central Pennsylvania's Appalachian Mountains. I was a long way from Pacific Heights. We had told our real estate agent that we wanted to buy Grandma's house, and that's exactly what we got. The previous owners, the McCartneys, had 10 grandchildren who had grown up playing in the corners of the attic in the shade of the lawn. The couple, now in their 80s, had decided to move into town. Maintaining the big old building was hard work, and they felt they'd earned a rest. In the 1890s, a farmer had built this house in the middle of his land. Now, like many such farmhouses, all that remains of the original tract is the house and an acre of yard, with a handful of neighbors' dwellings sprinkled around the periphery. When viewed from a distance, the little community springs out of the fields in an inexplicable random way, like clusters of mushrooms that suddenly pop out of my lawn after a downpour. The gabled roof is a landmark, the tallest point around. No doubt this is the reason it has three lightning rods firmly attached at the peak. That first day I came to visit, the McCartneys were packing, sorting through the accumulation of four decades. As I walked from room to room, I was thankful the structure seemed solid. However, my stomach churned at the decor. Dining room walls of cracked plaster painted bird shit green, the living room wallpaper, a Depression-era pattern in dingy white covered with brown shrubbery, a suspended acoustic tile ceiling, homemade plywood kitchen counters, shag carpeting in assorted earth tones. I hadn't even made it upstairs yet, and I felt like crying. Just remember, I consoled myself, they'll be taking the Lazy Boy recliners with them. One recliner had its right arm covered with soot. Not until winter would I understand the significance of that detail. I could see years and years of remodeling stretching towards infinity, and I'd never even painted a room before. I could also envision my husband, Kirby, buying a fifth of scotch and taking a Greyhound bus back to San Francisco if I tried to make him do all this work by himself. Still, the house had fabulous old woodwork that provided a warmth money couldn't buy. Honey-colored chestnut cabinets, an ornate walnut banister, and the original wood-grain painted doors, a type of decorative painting popular with the Pennsylvania Dutch around.